Well, good morning and welcome to all, especially our guests who join us here today for the offering of this Mass, this Sunday morning here at the Church of the Madeleine. As you heard in the announcement, you also see in the bulletin the need for the items for the Vacation Bible School that's coming up later this month. And also that we have our next installment of our family movie night is this coming Friday evening for all children, young families, and those who are young of heart. You're welcomed as well. Please know that I'll be available to hear confessions this Tuesday evening from 6 to 7, as well as on Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 6. I will be away next weekend. As many of you know, I attempted to go on a camping trip back at the end of May, but because of the storms, that was rescheduled. So I'm going to try to go this next weekend. And Monsignor Gregory Geer, the Rector Emeritus of Holy Family Cathedral, will be here to offer and the Mass and also to preach at all the Masses. In the spring of 1992, I was my formation in the seminary, and I had a wonderful opportunity to spend a semester overseas to study in Israel, living most of the time in Jerusalem. And it was an amazing experience from January to May of that year. And one of the things I found that I wanted to do, part of that experience, was not to stand out as an American. Not to stand out as a tourist, especially. Now, I convinced myself at the time as part of like, well, I want to have to absorb as much of this as possible. And really looking back, I think I had a lot to do about my pride. I wanted to be kind of to blend in as much as I could. And it actually worked a couple of times. Our main source of transportation was the city bus system. And there was a couple of times there at the bus stop, I was standing there and I had an Israeli come up and speak to me in Hebrew. Now, part of me was going, yes, I did it. You know, I passed as a native. Another part of me is realizing I have absolutely no idea what has been said because I didn't speak hardly a word of Hebrew. And I learned how to say in Glit Bivakasha, which is English, please, which is about half of my Hebrew vocabulary. Now, interesting, in the areas of around East Jerusalem, which are predominantly Palestinian, Arab, I was never mistaken as a native. I stood out as an American. And I asked somebody why. He said, well, one, you're wearing American clothes, American blue jeans. You walk like an American, and we do swagger, by the way. We just can't help it. I guess that's part of who we are. And also, I was told that no Israeli in his right mind would be there alone in those neighborhoods unarmed. So basically an American would be blundering into those areas. But I was always treated well. In the Palestinian areas, people came up to me and immediately spoke English. Because they recognized me, pegged me as an American. Now, sometimes I've gone in places and it's just an impossibility to try to blend into the local population. As a young priest, I went on a mission trip to Guatemala, to Santiago Atitlan, where, as we recently heard, some very good news that Father Stan Rother, a priest from Okarcha, Oklahoma, who was killed there in 1981, he was a missionary. The Vatican Commission has recently declared his death as a martyrdom. He was not killed as a part of a robbery. It was not a political assassination. He'd be declared a martyr, and this hopefully will pave the way for him being recognized or beatified as a saint here in the United States. And I got to go to that city and to the shrine that's there in his honor. And there's no way for me to fit into the local population because the local population, the men come up to about this high on me. I'm literally head and shoulders over the native people. Now, being recognized as one thing while being another can happen in some very interesting ways. Yesterday in the United States, we celebrated the 4th of July, Independence Day. In Italy, on the church's calendar, is the memorial of a man known as Blessed Giorgio Frassati. He was born in the city of Turin in northern Italy in 1901, and he was the son of a prominent family. His father was the editor of one of the largest newspapers in Italy, a left-leaning publication, also was active in politics. His father was something of an agnostic. His mother was a well-known painter, but was a nominal Catholic at best. In my own appearances, Giorgio was an average young man of his social class and of his time. He was not an outstanding student. He was considered average. He was known to have a good sense of humor, had a passion for mountain climbing. But when his short life came to an end, there really, at least on one appearance, there was not much that really stood out. But there were some things, if you go above the surface, was a bit different. You see, Giorgio, for whatever reason, as a young child, developed a great devotion to Christ and the Eucharist and the love of the liturgy. And as an adolescent, he would just be gone for hours at a time. His parents had no idea what he was doing. They're thinking, well, he must be off getting into mischief while he was usually in a chapel praying before the Blessed Sacrament or praying the rosary. And he also saw, as he grew into a young adulthood, the need to put the virtues of faith into action. He became politically active as a college student. He put bringing Christian virtues into the political realm. He actively opposed Benito Mussolini, who later became the fascist dictator of Italy. Now, Frassati's life was cut short when in late June of 1925, he contracted polio and died 5 days later on July 4th. At the age of 24. And it was only then that his family recognized truly who their son was. You see, they expected a lot of the people of their social class and status to be at the funeral mass, which they were, but they weren't prepared for the thousands of poor people that lined the streets for the funeral procession. And that's when they found out for more than 7 years, their son, on what spare time he had, was visiting and getting to know the poor people of Turin, taking care of the sick, the homeless, the dying, getting to know them on a first name basis. And whatever allowance that he was allowed by his father, he immediately gave it away, given the money to take the bus, to take the train. He would give it away and then would run home to get in time there for dinner, because in the Frassati household, you were supposed to be at the dinner table at the right time. And his father had been apparently irritated that his son kept on losing his coats. He wasn't losing them. He was giving them away to the poor. And he probably contracted polio by taking care of those who were sick. And it was the poor people of Turin who petitioned the archbishop to open the cause for Frassati's canonization. And in the year 1990, Saint Pope John Paul II beatified him, called him a man of the Beatitudes. And he's a model for young Catholic men. Today's scriptures for this Mass speak about prophets. And prophets not someone as somebody who is like seeing way into the future, but rather one who is, one who speaks divinely inspired revelation, one who is an effective spokesperson for a cause. And we tend to think of prophets as those Old Testament figures. Or those who are to be spokespersons, well, that's the job for the clergy. That's why we have bishops and priests and deacons, and that's why we have religious and so on. But Giorgio Frassati was not a member of the clergy. He was a layman. He was a college student. He was a prophet, in spite of outward appearances. You know, the most difficult task for a prophet is not to go speak the truth to a foreign group of people, but rather to speak the truth at home. To those who think they know the prophet the best are often the ones who need to hear the words the most. That's what we hear about the prophet Ezekiel, one of those Old Testament prophets. He's being told to go be that spokesperson, to go speak those divinely revealed truths, not to a foreign land, but to his own people, referred to as that rebellious house of Israel. It's kind of like Frassati's parents not realizing until his death who their son really was. It's like Jesus, the response that he gets when he teaches in the synagogue, that Jewish place of worship in his hometown of Nazareth, there he's met with disbelief. He's met basically with the response of, who does this guy think he is? And we hear again about the need for faith. As we've been hearing the last several Sundays in the gospel readings, we heard last Sunday the woman cured of her illness, the young child that's raised from the dead, that gift of faith. We heard previously on Sundays about the men, the disciples in the boat in the midst of the storm, the need for faith. And faith not so much in this context as an adherence to a religious doctrine, but as to meaning to trust in Jesus. And today we hear about the lack of faith, the lack of trust. That's why Jesus is not able to accomplish much in his hometown. And part of the truth, part of the trust, part of this faith is that when the creative power of God enters into our lives, there's always the question of what do we do with it? Do we accept it? Do we cooperate with it? Do we let it take us with where it will take us, or do we reject it? As in the case of those who thought they knew Jesus the best, who needed to hear his words the most, were the ones who rejected him. One of the sacramental graces that we are given at baptism is to be prophets. Those who speak divinely inspired revelation. To be effective spokesperson for a cause. In this case, the cause for Jesus, the cause for faith, the cause for being the church. What it means to cooperate with this grace as it enters into our lives. And we also have to realize if we're going to be prophets, then the desire to blend in completely into the larger culture, to be taken as natives, is not an option. You know, it's been for a number of decades in the Catholic Church in the United States to try to assimilate into the larger culture. And those of you, particularly if you're of Irish Catholic immigrant background, you probably know some of the stories of how poorly your ancestors were treated. The Italians weren't treated very well either, as well as others. And the kind of this goal that the Catholics will assimilate to the larger society, and I think we're just, that's pretty much a goal of the last century, and I think in this century we're discovering that that was something of a mistake. It's more important for us to be recognized not as Americans, but as disciples of Jesus, as the body of Christ, the church, to act like prophets, to speak like prophets, to be prophets, knowing that we are going to a rebellious house. That like Jesus, there are those that will respond to us with the attitudes of, who do you think you are? And when we're met with that kind of resistance, I think the words of Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta are well suited. And she said, it's not about being successful, it's about being faithful. To be faithful to our prophetic role. And as we celebrate this 4th of July weekend, hopefully we should be giving thanks that we get to live in this country as opposed to many others. That we do enjoy a great many freedoms, particularly as followers of Christ. To celebrate freedom, but to do so with a bit of a caution and a bit with a prophetic tone. Because culturally, freedom is often understood to mean that in our autonomous humanity, we are free to determine what is right and what is wrong. And the systems and the powers in society then work to reinforce this belief. I think it looks good on paper, but in practice, often something else happens. That it leads not to freedom, but to enslavement. Enslavement to our opinions, enslavement to our misdirected actions, enslavement to the opinions of others, and we make a false idol out of this understanding of freedom. Because a biblical freedom, the freedom that we as the church are to enjoy and to proclaim and to share as prophets, is a bit different. It's the freedom to surrender one's life to God. Christ's sacrifice on the cross frees us from sin and eternal death, and we are free either to cooperate with this grace as it enters into our lives, just as it did for Sadi, or we are free to reject it, as those did that were in the synagogue. We are free to be prophets. The terms of freedom in terms of, in the context of religious belief and practice, I think Pope Francis has a very good take on this. He says about religious freedom, he says, it's not only about private thought and worship, it is the liberty to live both privately and publicly according to the ethical principles resulting from found truth. That's something for us to keep in mind in our country today. On many different levels, including the Supreme Court's recent decision concerning what is referred to as marriage equality. And if you were here last Sunday, I talked about how those who are upset with that decision, there is the freedom to either curse the darkness or to light a candle. To light a candle of hope and trust as a lived example in our own lives, the meaning of our faith, including the meaning of traditional marriage. To share that articulately, joyfully with others, and respecting the God-given dignity of everybody, including those who were very happy with that decision. We cannot let our beliefs or maybe our passions undermine that dignity that all people have. For we are free to be prophets in the manner in which we live our lives, to orient our lives to this surrender to grace, as did people like Giorgio Frassati, to see that the virtues of our faith, when they touch upon matters of ethics, whether it's political ethics, medical, moral, or sexual ethics, they're not there to limit our freedom, to restrict us, to fence us in, but rather to see them as guardrails to protect us from going off the cliff to our destruction. We are free to be prophets, knowing, as did St. Paul, that God's grace is enough for us. Power is made perfect in weakness, to be content with insults for the sake of Christ. For to be prophets means that we stand out, that we don't assimilate. It means that others may not know, and we ourselves may not know in this life the role that we have had as prophets. But it means to accept the possibility of rejection and hostility. It means cooperating with grace given us in Christ Jesus to know true freedom, including the grace and freedom offered to us this day in this time of prayer in the liturgy, at the gift of grace at this altar, the gift of freedom in the Eucharist.